Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. On the day that Kylian Mbappe was presented to the fans after signing that mega deal to stay at PSG, of course, it's been the talk of the town over the last 48 hours since it was confirmed that he turned down Real Madrid to stay at the French Champions. And we're talking big, big money. Not quite the same money that the likes of, I don't know, Julien Laurent, Mario Malkiel, Shaka Hissop are on. They're all with us here today.
That's like a new signing, isn't it?
It is.
Well,
exactly.
I mean, what I mean is he's presented to the fans, but they already know him, don't they? I mean, it's a little bit pathetic, really, isn't it?
But we'll get on to that in a moment. But for the first time today, we heard from Kylian Mbappe about this decision to stay. Everybody knows I wanted to leave last year, but things are different now. In sporting terms, personally, leaving my country wasn't the right thing. There's a sentimental aspect to this as well. We spoke for months about the sporting project and we spoke about money for just a few minutes. I did not say no to Real Madrid. I said yes to France and PSG. It was too early to leave for free. Meanwhile, Al Khelaifi came out and said money wasn't the most important thing for Kylian. It was the sporting project, not earnings. There are clubs in Spain that could pay more. Right then. Jules, first off, that's nonsense, isn't it? Like, PSG could have outbid anyone at any time, no matter what the money was.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, Kylian had a really good line as well. He said, we talked about the sporting side of it for days and or months, he said. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about the famous image rights for a few hours and money, only a few minutes. Yeah, of course, we believe you. I mean, I guess it's easy when you get offered that kind of contract. You don't think twice. It takes you 1 minute to say, ooh, all that money? Yeah, where do I sign? But yeah, no, you're right. I think money was a big part and PSG were always going to be stronger than anybody else.
How much are we talking, Jules?
It's not completely clear yet. I'm being told a little bit over 50 million net a year, which is a lot of money, of course. Plus there's the signing on fee because it's a new contract. They made sure that they didn't extend his current contract. It's a brand new contract. I think to try to avoid paying the 45 million euros they would owe Monaco, which is in the clause of the contract that Kylian signed when he moved from Monaco to PSG. But there's huge bonuses and huge clauses in the contract that can even bring up even more the total amount of the package.
I've seen 200 million, Jules. Is that about the ballpark?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more than that, I was told.
But what's PSG?
You don't suppose anything, right? That's 50 million. 50 million what?
Net.
A year?
Yeah, after taxes.
Right, I'll suppose you something. That's a lot of money to batter teams in France, isn't it? A lot of money, that, just to batter the rest, isn't it?
Yep.
So if that's what they want to pay, fair play to them. All the nonsense, all the BS, all the PR, just seen it there. He's entitled to make a decision that he wants to make, but spare us the balderdash of all this nonsense. He's taken the easy decision and he's taken the money. That's what he's done, right? He's the big cheese at PSG. He knows it and he wants it. Well, that's fair enough. But I'll repeat what I said a few days ago and what I've been consistent with saying. Without disrespecting anybody who plays in the French League does not really resonate outside of France. If he wants to go and mix it with all the big cheeses, he had to make a move, and he didn't. So good luck to him. Take the money. We'll see you in the Champions League. See how that works out.
Can you blame him, though, for taking the money, given it's so much?
Listen, the money's so much for these players now. It's not like he's earning money that's going to make sure he's got a roof over his house at the end of the year, at the end of his career, and therefore he's got to make a decision. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars over a decade. So spare me if Real Madrid were going to pay him 5 million a year less or 5 million a year more or whoever. It's a drop in the ocean when you're at that figure. Drop in the ocean. If it's about football, in my opinion, he should have gone. I said 3-4 days ago, whatever it was on Friday, I'm shocked by this decision. I really am shocked by it, but it's his decision. I hoped he would make the jump.
Mario, are you as shocked?
No, I was. I knew it was going to take some time, and I know his situation because I played with his stepbrother when I was at Rennes, and I remember like a couple of years ago we wanted to make a documentary, and I called the stepbrother to speak to Mbappe, and he said to me, "Let me deal with the parents first." So he had a conversation, and his parents are overseeing a lot of things. So in this deal making, when this time was taking so long, I already knew what they were doing. Like, they were waiting to see what is the best deal and what is the best situation for him. Eventually, he made that choice to stay in the country. Look, if France wants to build their competition into a level that people are, like Greg said, more start resonating on a different level, they have to keep their star player. How they did that is not, you know, like if they gave him too much money or whatever it is. But one thing they made sure, if we want to compete with the big boys, we have to make sure we keep one and then start building from that. And that, it could be for me the only answer why they went so far to keep him there. And that's for me the only reason that I think that, I mean, if you, I've not heard a lot of football players that got a phone call from the president. I don't know about you then, but I don't know a lot that got that moment. So he got it.
So Shaka, what do you make of it all? It's the first time you've been on.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is well, I'm not going to comment on the money. Nothing about the money in today's football makes an awful lot of sense to me. On one hand, though, I'm sympathetic in that Mbappe is Parisian and wants to stay in Paris. I was at Newcastle when Alan Shearer turned down Manchester United to join Newcastle United. He's a Geordie and he wanted to come back to his hometown club. And despite the criticism that he got then, I understood his thinking. And I kind of feel it's the same for Mbappe here, wanting to stay in Paris. The thing that confuses me, though, is he keeps... everybody's throwing out this sporting project. Kylian Mbappe admits that he wanted to leave last year, but the sporting project is kept him for another 3 years. How has the sporting project changed in the last 12 months? Surely PSG 12 months ago had every intention of winning all the French titles and wanted to win the Champions League. That's what they were building for. I really want to know what has changed to the extent that now he realizes PSG is the place to be. I don't understand. And until I have a clearer picture of that, you just have to fall back on, well, PSG paid more money and therefore it's all about the money.
There's been a lot of speculation, isn't it, as well as the money, as the role that Kylian Mbappe has been promised within the club when it comes to decision-making. He addressed that as well. He said, "I'm not going to go beyond my role as a player. It would be starting the project off on the wrong foot if the flagship player puts pressure on the director of sport. Everyone must stay in their lane. But if he wants to speak, I can talk about football for hours with you or with anyone else, but I won't influence sales and recruitment. It's not my job." Al-Khalifi said the sports project was the most important point for Mbappe. "I promise that we sign with Mbappe, we sign with new players too." So that kind of goes against the little jewels of what we've been hearing, in the sense that Kylian Mbappe will be a key member of the decision-making process going forward?
Well, I don't think so. I think he said what he had to say. And by the way, that was a masterclass of a press conference. I mean, he's only 23, he's so intelligent. He knows everything that's coming, the questions. If you want to trick him, you can't trick him. I mean, he's incredible, really is, on and off the field. But he was always going to say this anyway. We know, and we were told that he didn't want to work with Leonardo. Leonardo got sacked literally a few hours after the new contract was signed. He wanted Luis Campos as the sporting director. Guess what? Luis Campos is coming. And this will be what it is. Of course, he's not the one who's going to pick up the phone and say, "Hey, why don't you come to my club?" But he will be a big part in the discussions and in the decisions that they will make. And again, I think plenty of top players, world-class players, have had that kind of role before. It's not written in his contract. It's not black and white on paper. But I think often, I'm sure the boys have played in teams where You ask the big players or you ask the captain, okay, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I don't think this is much, much different. Just to go back on what Shaka said, a lot of things have changed already. And I mentioned Leonardo. I think the coach, the manager could be next. And also the direction the team is taking, the club is taking in terms of recruitment and the face of the team, in the sense they want younger players, they want maybe more French players. They don't want the bling names anymore. That's why I think Neymar, mm-hmm. they're certainly going to try to find an exit for Neymar, which is very different to the PSG that we've seen, from the last 5 years especially, about where it was a lot about the marketing and the bling side of things.
Are we making too much of a big deal of this, of Kylian Mbappe having a say as to who comes in, who doesn't?
Don't know of any player that's ever had a say about who comes and who goes. When I've played with some big players, they might be asked about thoughts on one or two things, but the final decision generally always comes down to the finances in the club. This Mbappe thing, on a scale of 1 to 100.
I think I know where I'm going. You're going with this.
Yeah. But I tell you, but seriously, I go back to it. But I go back, that's my point. That's my whole point. Is in a football parlance, to me, this is not a good decision. Almost every big French player, maybe there's the odd anomaly, and I said this a few days, almost every big French player has gone out and played for the biggest and the best in the best leagues. And they've gone out there and they've carried, the expectations of being one of their nation's great players and taken it to another country. And a lot of them have succeeded. And there's been a lot of them. There's been a hell of a lot of them. Not just Platini and Zidane and all the others. I'm not going to say Leboeuf. there's been a lot of these players. But that's a disappointment for me. Is that I think it's easy for him in France.
Right.
I think it's too easy for him in France. The stats this year will back it up. He's flat trap bullying a lot of these players. Yes, I get it. The Champions League, I get it. But the best leagues in the world are the Premier League, La Liga, Italy, Bundesliga, and then France comes after that. And here we have the best player, arguably, in the world at the moment, arguably, quite happy to take a pot full of gold just to sit there and smash the smithereens these teams week in, week out. Who's getting excited by that? Tell me, apart from the PSG supporters, who's getting is Kylian Mbappe getting excited by that? Is that getting the juices flowing, going out there, winning league on? Is it? If that's what he's happy with, hey, fair play. I thought he might have a bit more about him. Get out there, prove yourself at the Bernabeu or wherever it is. Take the bull by the horns. Show Benzema that Benzema's not the top man, even though he's playing the best football of his career. Go in there and really take it by the scruff of the neck. No. I'll just take the pot of gold here, and I'll sit here, and I'll win the French League, and I'll talk about projects. Fair enough. That's what he wants. I have no interest whether PSG win Ligue 1 or not. It is very unimportant in the big scheme of things. I think he's bottled it at the moment at 23 years old to make that big move. He's in his comfort zone. Let him be.
Jules, did he bottle it?
Maybe. I personally don't think so. I don't think there's nothing wrong by wanting to try to win the Champions League for your hometown club and give it another year or two. He never said he was going to stay his whole life. He's only 23. If he goes at in Real Madrid in 2 years, I don't see where the problem is. I think he felt there was unfinished business in Paris and he wanted to give it a bit more time to see if he can achieve what he wanted to achieve. He will leave. He won't be there all his life, all his career. He will leave very soon, 1 year, 2 years. I'm not even sure he's going to go the whole 3 years of the new deal. So he's going to leave at some point. We know that. The question was, did he want to leave now or did he want to try to get that Champions League, the first one in the club's history, blah, 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 and be the first one to deliver it. And I think that's what he chose. I don't know why sentiment should be a problem here. And I don't think
he's been trying for 5 years, is he not?
To win it.
He's been trying for numerous years already.
He's a 17-year-old player.
He was
17 when he arrived.
Yeah, but as a teenager, he was winning everything. He was a teenager who's winning everything.
Okay, so now there's a limit. After 5 years, you have to stop trying.
No, but I mean, I think after 5 years, I think after 5 years, you get a decent picture if it's going to happen or not. Particularly when you're just about to sack managers and lose more of your top players, and then your other highest earner or highest earner is about to come to Major League Soccer, it looks like, in a year's time. So I don't get it.
I mean, I'm not really sure what you just, like, they're going to lose the top earners, and I think they went to a final, to a semi-final in the last 2 years, well, before this season, so they're clearly not far from it. Why is he not giving it another year or two and then see, and if it's a failure again, if they haven't done it, then he's going to move on. There's no doubt he's going to move on at some point. I don't think there's any shame from him, his part, to try to give it another season or two to try to get there.
Shaka, from that football perspective, is it disappointing, though, that we see the best player in the world not competing in one of the best leagues in the world?
I think as every neutral, just speaking totally neutrally here, yes, you do want to see the best players playing at the biggest clubs in the toughest leagues. But I go back to, I sympathise when it's your hometown club. I think it has a different, you know, emotional impact on you. So I'm offering Mbappe that sympathy, that he just wanted to see PSG rise to what he feels is their greatest potential. And if that's the case, just come out and say that. Again, and I take Jules's point about the changes that have been made, even though Mbappe has gone to some lengths to say that the changes that have been made have nothing to do with him. I don't get this sporting project. I never have, really, in all honesty. I think people just hide behind, I'm here for the project. I'm not really sure exactly what that means, particularly from a player perspective.
Well, you've got the other guy in Alf Inge Haaland, who made a decision through his people to go... Erling Haaland, sorry, Alfie being his dad. Erling Haaland, they made a decision to go Austria, and then they went to Germany, where his progress would continue at Dortmund. And then, you know, that, I think that was the right thing to do. And then there comes a time you say, well, and it's a different scenario, I know, but, you know, Dortmund are way off the pace and so forth, and have just rehired Edin Terzic. But they've gone, no, it's time to move on to bigger and better things. It's time to go and test yourself. Yeah, I'll go to Man City. Is there a pressure going to Man City? Yes. Would Guardiola drop you if it wasn't working and other players were doing it? Yes. But the time's to move to the big leagues, the leagues that are resonating, the leagues that really people take note of, and go and showcase your talents. I haven't got a problem with people taking the money.
Right.
I haven't got a problem. Not an issue. We all want the money. I just feel at 23, having been there for the amount of time he has, it was time to move on and showcase it at the biggest and the best in the best leagues. And for the time being, that's clearly not going to happen.
Mario, from just a purely football perspective, you know, are you disappointed that he didn't move on to La Liga or the Premier League?
No, I wanted to see Mbappe, of course, in a league that already has that statue. And I think just for him, the pick, just overall, when I listen to you guys, it's there is clearly a focus on this. There is a focus on this. This is not only Mbappe, but it's slightly bigger than that. You know, they're looking at the league and they're looking at the key player. Who can bring them to that level? And if they let their key player go, then, you know, then the power of the league is going to, okay, it's already not at the level that they would like to be. And now they're letting him go, it's going to get worse. So now they keep him there. He is there. The emotional connection, like you're right, just answered the emotional level for Haaland, for example, is only because his dad was also connected to it. So that was also one of the key things. Now, here Mbappe is in Paris. He has his parents. And one thing that I highlighted before, the parents are very supportive behind this kid. And I think sometimes when it comes to football, is we want the support of our parents, of course, but we also want to satisfy our parents in the sense of, like, If they said, like, okay, these are the two offers that you have, we would like to keep you for one or a short period more in Paris because we will enjoy it. And I think those are one of the key things for him to pick it. And away from that, yeah, now is a journey going to happen. How long is it going to take them for winning the Champions League? Because if not, he can look back at the situation that he might have slightly picked a wrong side. Because if he doesn't win the Champions League, because winning the league, that is already written for him. But now he needs to win the Champions League. That's the focus, and if they don't win it, the people start questioning him.
La Liga, of course, took this very badly. Tebas, the president, throwing his toys out of the pram, talking about the money that PSG have spent and, of course, will continue to spend on Mbappe. Well, we saw El Khelaifi hit back today, saying...
Well, that's not exactly hitting back. That's a feather duster.
Maybe Tebas is worried that Ligue 1 becomes stronger than La Liga. La Liga isn't the same as it was 3 or 4 years ago. We have Mbappe. He stays with us. And the rest, honestly, I don't care.
It sounds like me there, doesn't it?
Well, yes,
don't care, but...
Jules, to that point, I don't quite understand the correlation between Mbappe staying with PSG, a team that's going to once again run away with Ligue 1, and making the league as a whole stronger.
No, although you would think that you could get more money in terms of TV rights, of course. If you lose Mbappe, people are going to pay less for the league and rights than like TV channels than if Mbappe stays, of course. Does that give an incentive to other clubs to say, like, okay, clearly PSG would be still very strong because Mbappe is there. I mean, they would have been very strong even without him, I guess. But to try to bridge the gap or try to do what Lille and Monaco have done in recent years, especially Lille, because Lille beat an Mbappe PSG side before to win the league. I don't know. I think the punchline was ready to have a go back at Tebas and at La Liga. Not sure it's really accurate. Although, yeah, of course, La Liga has lost Cristiano and Messi in the last few years, so it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still a better league than Ligue 1. So I think this is just the little war of wars between Tebas and El Khelaifi. We know there's no love between them two. But I think that punchline was ready, and it was an easy one as well to throw back at Tebas.
Jules, we'll say thank you very much. I know it's been a busy few days. I'd like to come on here and get a shout out by Craig. Meanwhile, you can go to listen to more of Jules on the latest edition of the Gav and Jules podcast, which is available to listen to now. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Away from Kylian Mbappe, great scenes in Manchester, particularly if you're Jack Grealish, who seems to thoroughly enjoy himself throughout the parade and City celebrating that fourth title in 5 years. And they did it, of course, in such an extraordinary manner. Those three goals coming in just 5 minutes to see them come from behind to beat Aston Villa by 3-2 and pip Liverpool at the post by winning the Premier League by 1 point. Mario Xhaka with us. Craig, you were mentioning your chance.
He had a better party than he did season, didn't he?
Oh, Jack Grealish.
I mean,
he was really good.
Well, he wasn't bad, but he didn't exactly. He didn't like.
I think his head might be bad tomorrow.
Well, fair play. I mean, he can enjoy it. He can enjoy it. I mean, he's moved in. It's not easy moving to that kind of club with all those players. You know, he was the big cheese at Aston Villa, the big cheese, and you move in there, and all of a sudden, you're not even in the top five or six of the big cheeses. So that was difficult for him. But
even you being you.
Yes.
Yesterday was cool, wasn't it?
What did I say to you?
I know.
Last week, I said to you, Aston Villa, I'm not going to lie down. It's nothing to do with Steven Gerrard. It's nothing to do with Philip Coutinho scoring. Oh, and that's Liverpool trying to win it for Man City. That's just players being professional. And this was City doing what City do. What they did in 2012 against lowly QPR, they made it so difficult for themselves. What we got yesterday was all the crowd shots again.
Yeah.
The people biting their fingernails, the people with their heads and hands. I've seen it before. And then we saw the changes. We saw, less than 20 minutes left, Guardiola just staring at his shoes, 10 years ago, I saw Mancini on his knees on the touchline, almost crying. And yet, through brilliance and through sloppiness from Villa, through the changes, the emotion, they dug it out again at a time when, you know, when they were losing 2-0, I thought, you know, Liverpool are going to let them away with this here. And that's going to be a huge mistake. And then they scored, and then they scored the third.
Yeah.
But what City were able to do at the end was amazing. And I always felt it was going to be a really emotional day again. Because these things, I've played in the last, not in England, in Scotland, I've played in the last day of a season when another team can win the league and you can win it. It is a hellish week of preparation. And I think we saw that from these City players.
Of course, the back pages of the newspapers in England all about that five-minute spell in which Manchester City went from agony to ecstasy. Mario, we see a lot, don't we? We haven't got a horse in this race. You know, we're not Manchester City fans, Liverpool fans or anything like that. But just from a pure sports view, from just a pure entertainment view, that 5 minutes was something else.
It was incredible. You know, like you're watching football and you just think like, I had both games on and I'm just waiting who's going to pinch, you know, like do the punchline first. And then Liverpool goes up. And then you go to City and then they take 5 minutes to give you an answer. I was like, wow. You know, like at one point I thought Liverpool, like what Greg highlighted, I thought Liverpool was taking this home. It's done. And I was like, yeah, this is typical club. Yeah, this mentality and everything. And then, oh my God, how these guys did it. I think they had so many creative people in that team. That is what the City has. And so many goals they scored over, 99 goals in one season. I was like, it was almost impossible for them not to make it. So that's why for them to go down, I was shocked. But what he did at halftime, the conversation he had with them, must have worked really well because it took 5 minutes to change the whole game around.
Shaka, how long have we been working together? 12 years, and you think you've seen everything, and then something like that happens.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. And I don't care if you're a football fan or not. I think that was must-see viewing for everybody, for all the reasons that Craig and Mario just pointed out. Both games poised so delicately. Liverpool are all square. City are two back, and you just wonder, can Villa hold on? Then they score. Liverpool are still tied with Wolves. And honestly, you cannot take your eye off either game. Because even as you're watching Liverpool and with that going on, you know, you look at to see the fans are getting messages on to the players, how the players are going to react. It was absolutely ridiculous. No, like I say, regardless of who you support or whether you watch this game or not, you had to be glued just for pure drama.
And if some fans don't realise what pressure does to even the best, that's what it does. Why are Man City losing 2-0 to Aston Villa at home and they've got nothing to play for? Because Villa have got nothing to lose and City have got everything to lose. Am I the player that makes a mistake? Am I the player that gives the ball away? Am I the player that gets sent off? Am I going to cost my team, my club, my manager, all my teammates? As I said to you, I saw it firsthand. The year in 98, I saw, you know, and I'm talking about big players. Henrik Larsson, Paul Lambert had just won a Champions League at Dortmund. Wim Janssen, in the week that we could win the league and Rangers could win it, stopped training and sent everybody home because the training session was a shambles. The boys were almost fighting because of the pressure. Because it was just getting to everybody. And whilst these Man City players have been through this before, it doesn't go away. It doesn't make it any easier that you've won the league before. It's still an opportunity to win it or lose it. And I think that's why we never saw, you know, you flick it on and it's Manchester City 4, Aston Villa 0. That's too easy.
Right.
It's just too easy.
As a player, do you prefer the 4-0 or the 3-0?
Oh, yeah, I take the 4-0 for sure. Particularly when you know for our scenario, we knew Rangers were going to win probably at Tannadice against Dundee United, and they did. And so we had to win. They probably knew, although it took a while. Listen, Liverpool are going to beat Wolves. That's got to be the conversation. We need to do this for ourselves. We can't make any mistakes. And I think we saw the pressure and the tension again and the supporters and the stadium and for the manager. But in a kind of perverse way, it just makes for brilliant television and brilliant entertainment. And that's once again, I mean, to have what was it, 1 point in the end or whatever it was between these two fantastic teams after 38 games, it's just, I mean, I saw a stat today that said, and it's just stats, that Liverpool would have won umpteen amount of leagues with the 91 points, 90-odd points, and whatever it is Klopp's got at Liverpool that he's finished runner-up.
Yeah.
They would have won almost every other league.
Yeah, you look at that, over the last four seasons, three of the campaigns, they were separated by 1 point, with the exception, of course, last year with the injuries, and the year when they won it with 99 points. It is something special. And Mario, it's interesting as well. Like, if you look at the those that are coming up from behind, we thought Chelsea were going to push them. They fell away, obviously. We know what's going on with Manchester United. Arsenal are very young. Spurs, you wouldn't really trust. It just shows the character and the greatness of these two sides. When we reflect on Premier League history, these two are going to be up there near the top, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, by far. And I think anyone that wants to join that party of them knows who is he competing with and knows what he has to deliver. Because those two, this is not something that happened, you know, like just this season, the season before and before that. They've been going at it for so long. And you know what the thing is? When you're watching two teams, is why, like, sometimes you look into teams and you say, like, oh, they're really fighting for it, but they also play beautiful football. And that's very difficult there, because sometimes we only talk about how great, okay, Pep, we all know the Barcelona style and the style he was going to bring, the way he moved the ball quickly and create so many opportunities. Now we look at a Liverpool side. He changed the way people have to play. You know, when people press you on the ball and try to win the ball back quickly and then hit them on the counterattack, they're very good at that. So having two sides that don't always play the same way, but in a way, they both know what is effective for their team. And I think that's what everybody that wants to play the game has to compete with. I remember my time, Arsenal. Arsenal was very good at that. You know, sometimes, you know what I hated the most when I was playing? Is that they will kick you and they will tell you, I'm sorry. That was only just to slow the game down, because they always wanted to be in charge of the tempo of the game. And I never get that. You have friends in the team like Vieira or Thierry Henry. They'll kick you and they go, hey, Mario, I'm sorry, man. You know, I'm sorry. And then you look at them and you're like, oh, my God, when I get my chance, I'm going to give it to you. And City and Liverpool are doing identical to that. They're so clever and they know how to win games. And that's why, you know, City won the league.
I was just funny. Mario mentioned Arsenal there. I was just going to say, going back to Mario's point about not only are the two great teams with two of the best managers, but they play differently, but as entertaining as each other.
Sure.
City, a bit more possession based. Liverpool, a lot more dynamic and quicker. And it does. And although there's been great teams, Chelsea in the Mourinho years, Ferguson over a 20-year period with a changeover of different teams, but they remind me, if I was putting the two of them together, it's almost like a hybrid Arsenal of the great Wenger era,
right,
where when he had Henri and Petit and Vieira and Adams and all these other guys, and it was a mix, as Mario said, they could play some of the most swashbuckling football, but they could hit you on a counter-attack, and they were all big, big, strong boys as well. And that's what I think an amalgam, although they didn't win the Champions League, that Wenger team, they were more than good enough to do so. This Liverpool and City team sort of reminds me of an amalgamation of that great Wenger era at Arsenal, where he even had Sir Alex Ferguson banging his head on the wall thinking, and he said it himself, Ferguson, I've got to beat this guy.
Yeah.
They were a brilliant team.
And of course, City going to have Haaland next season, Shaq.
Which makes them even more difficult to beat, and I think that raises the bar somewhat, but obviously, that's a signing with an eye on the Champions League, which continues to elude Manchester City. But to the point around the Premier League, it makes them all the better. It forces everybody else to do likewise. I think Liverpool, you've seen how they continue to do business. I mean, Diaz this January has added another dimension to them. And that's the beauty of these two teams. And Craig was just talking about Manchester United and Arsenal and that rivalry. How these two have remained consistent. City have the money to bring in whoever they want, it seems, And Jurgen Klopp has gotten every single signing absolutely right in a way that they just keep getting better to match Manchester City. And so it promises to be this way for quite some time. Daunting task for everybody else, but for neutrals, it's mouth-watering just to think about what's to come.
Hey, you want to spend less time trying to become the mayor of Newcastle and getting your dog under control?
Yeah, what was going on, Jack?
We're live on television and you can't control your dog. But he's
happy
to be
over there. She's walking all over. I don't know. I'm home alone, so she's coming to me.
Last time I saw you on camera, you were sitting there waving to the crowd, lapping it all up.
I know.
Can't even keep his dog
at home. Exactly. I was.
So quite the season for Manchester City. Yes, they had a goal difference of plus 73. Why do I bring that up? Because across the city, Manchester United had a goal difference of zero. That was their worst goal difference ever. And it's a number of records when you take a look at how they fared in the Premier League. 58, the fewest points total ever. 57, the most goals allowed ever. And 12 defeats, that's the tied most losses going back to 2013-2014 season. Of course, today officially marked the start of a new era. Ten Hag taking charge at United. This is what he had to say to the press.
Did you think at all about coming here when you were offered the job? You have a big reputation, a growing reputation, and you're putting it on the line for a club that a lot of people think is not doing very well. It's a bit of a risk for you.
I don't see it as a risk. I think this club has a great history, and now let's make a future. We have to set clear purposes, clear strategy, and then you need people who have capabilities and have the right attitude, and a positive attitude, and 100% committed and work hard, and then we will achieve success.
How does an ideal team of yours play? How would you like to see them actually play? You know, your team playing as you like?
Yeah, it's, maybe you have seen Ajax, huh? And I like that. But it's always players dictating the way of play. And now when I have the idea, I will line up my best team. I will line up my players like that, that they get the best out of them, and that they can go to the maximum, that they feel comfortable in their role. And in the end, it's about getting the success together.
You've talked there about a project and a style of play, but also adapting to the players that you have. Does Cristiano Ronaldo fit into that project?
Of course.
What do you feel that he can bring going into next season?
Ronaldo?
Yeah.
And goals.
But you're looking for more leadership from as well to sort of lead this project forward these days?
I talked first with Ronaldo before I talked with you.
Realistically, how long do you think it will take before this club is challenging for the title again?
I don't think about that in this moment. What we're thinking about is this is a project. I know it takes time, but I also know that in this club, and I have the experience with other clubs like Ajax and Bayern Munich, in the top is never time. We want to win. We want to win. Every game, so we go from game to game, and then we will see.
There's a feeling in English football that nobody else will win the Premier League until the Klopp-Guardiola cycle is over and one of them or both of them decide to leave. Do you agree with that? Does everybody else have to wait?
In this moment, I admire them both. They play in this moment really fantastic football, both Liverpool and Man City. But you will always see that there are an era can come to an end. And I'm looking forward to battle with them, and I'm sure all the other in the Premier League, all the clubs will want to do that.
But can that era come to an end before they decide to leave?
I think, yeah.
Okay.
Is now a good time to be taking over at Manchester United, given the bar has been set so low?
Well, I suppose that is a very good point, and Yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. The problem is, there's a lot of dead wood in there. There's a lot of problems. I like his answer there, you know, well, a few of them. But I did like when he says about Ronaldo taking more leadership, and he said, I'll talk to Ronaldo first, and then I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I like that. Listen, I'm not going to discuss that here. I'm going to talk to the players. You know, we'll figure it out. But the one thing is, I'm sure he is, but most of the Dutch guys I played with and worked under are extremely focused, extremely single-minded, know what they want and pursue what they want with a great vehement, 100%. And he's going to have to do that at this club. I think the last two incumbents, one of them was a part-timer, obviously, in Ralf Rangnick, but the other one wasn't, were weak. Now, Rangnick's position was weak because of his position, mm-hmm. which was interim. Solskjaer was just weak because the players knew that he really shouldn't have been there. Erik ten Hag, I'm sure, will not give over that thought process or indication, but he's going to have to make some real hard decisions, and I think he knows that. It's his way or the highway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's going to hit... Or they'll be digging the next grave for the next Man United manager, because there's been a long list since Ferguson. Some pretty good managers have been in that graveyard, and he doesn't want to be the next one. So if he is going to fail, and I'm not saying he is, but if you are going to fail at a job, make sure you bloody well fail it doing it your way.
Right.
Not doing it the way of some other clown who has no idea what the football department is all about.
Mario, with your Ajax ways, tell us a little bit more about Ten Hag and how you think he's going to fit and what sort of person Manchester United have appointed.
Yeah, no, what Craig said is that at Ajax, we have a philosophy, right? You got to pick your own, the way you think is right. They want to play creative football, attacking football. They want to win beautifully. It's a little bit, I don't want to say the same, but it's similar to what Pep Guardiola plays. You understand? That's why Barcelona and Ajax are so much in connection with each other. But then away from that, what is very key at Man United is being in charge, because that club is so big and everybody will always be watching it. And what are you going to do? And that is going to be the question for Eric when he comes there, is making sure that he is the leader. Craig highlighted that, because one thing footballers are very good at, it's just like little kids. We will find your weak spot. And when we find it, they almost milk it out. And you as a manager, if you don't want that to happen, you have to show you who you are from the first day you get in charge. Because that's why, you know, like going back to what he said regarding Ronaldo, for example, he knows that he's one of the most key figures in his group. So he knows that he has to have that conversation with him. He needs to talk to him. He cannot do that in front of everybody in every camera, because then he's going to put himself wide open. No, he's got to do that individually, and that's what they do at Ajax too. You can always go and talk to the coach. So what I feel is that he's going to do a lot of work. That's why he highlighted he was on TV in Holland, and he said, I'm not going on holiday. And they all started laughing at him, and they said, like, you're not going on holiday? You're going to get a big job and all that? He said, no, I probably won't have time to go on holiday, because there's so much to be done there. So this is one of the key things, and that's why, you know, his focus is definitely 100% there, because he wants to build something beautiful. And now it comes down to his skills.
It's interesting, the point that both Mario and Shaka, that Craig made, Shaka, is the fact that you're going to go in there and make sure you know, let them know that you are the boss, which they haven't had really, I suppose, since Jose.
Yeah, that's right. Not only that you are the boss, that you have the backing of the club, you're there for the long term, and you're there to do things your way, as Craig rightly pointed out. Because anything less, I think the players take advantage of that, and anything less doesn't save Manchester United in the long term well at all. Manchester United have watched Manchester City and Liverpool put streets between them and who United are now and who they expect to be. And it's going to be a long time in addressing that gap. And you need to have a manager who has a plan, has authority, has the respect of that dressing room, and is going to build slowly over the next few years. Because It's not a quick fix. As Craig rightly points out, it's a lot of deadwood in our dressing room. You have to bring in a lot to start to compete. And it will take patience from everybody, fans included.
When Sir Alex Ferguson went into Old Trafford in the mid-80s, the game has changed and the way that the players are recruited and the finances have changed. But the ethos is the same. He went into a struggling United side with some really big players and decided that there was a bit of a drinking culture, a bit of a party culture among some of the real big hitters. Mm-hmm. And they were big hitters, and he got rid of them. The only one that survived was Brian Robson. And Brian Robson survived, I think, as Sir Alex Ferguson said himself, because he was just too good, as everybody knows. He survived. The rest of them were gone within a year or two, maybe even less than that. And that just showed the rest of the players and the incoming players who was manager. Now, will Erik ten Hag get that amount of time as Ferguson got when he seemed to be close to the sack at one point before an FA Cup final win and blah, blah, blah? Probably not. But the ethos and the similarities of what he needs to do are kind of similar. He needs to figure out who's with him and who's not with him. And he needs to figure out the good apples and the bad apples. And to go back to Mario's point, the players picked up the weakness in Ralf Rangnick, and that weakness was, one, he didn't have a really big name in coaching, and two, he didn't have a really big contract. He had a six-month contract. Yeah. They knew that. They found that weakness. They leaked stories to the press. They talked about his training. They were lacklustre in their performances. And so this, I like the way this new manager speaks. I like the way his Ajax team plays. I think it's a better appointment than going for Pochettino. And I don't necessarily buy this, well, Pochettino's got Premier League experience. Well, he didn't have Premier League experience when he came to Southampton and then he moved to Tottenham.
Yep.
And then everybody's talking about him with Man United. I like this appointment because I think this guy's super single-minded, plays good football, is not going to suffer any fools, and then it's up to Man United what they do in terms of backing him. But the early signs are they've got themselves a real good apple here, and now it's down to what players are going to be able to do the business for him and what players are going to sign for Man United,
yeah,
which is never really a big story before because they had so much clout to go out and use up most of the other teams. Unfortunately, at the moment, they're in the Europa League,
yep,
and they just scraped into that. So it's going to be a big task for him to pull in some of the real big hitters that they need to match up to the teams that are winning the Premier League, because we've just already talked about City and Liverpool, and we know how good they are.
Mario, what do the players say about him at Ajax?
Oh, the players at Ajax really love him. Like, when he left, you understand, some of the players really highlighted, because, you know what he think, what he built at Ajax was that everybody wanted to win for him. And I think that's for any team important. Like, you need players on the field that really want to win for you. If the players don't stand behind him, and that's what Greg said to Rangnick, they start joking about him in the dressing room. You don't want that. You know, when the manager comes in and then you see a couple of group of guys that go like, oh, he's coming in. Okay, you don't want that. You don't want that. You want everybody to be, okay, the manager's coming in, guys. Okay, let's wait. And he created that. And I think that atmosphere also because he brought in a lot of young talent that he brought himself. And that brought the difference. Like, I know we're talking about players that left, like De Ligt and De Jong and all those kind of Gravenberg, that is the one that's going to Bayern now. But he created those young talents himself because I know the club creates you, but then later on, it's the manager in the first team that has to give you that chance and has to see the ability of you. And I think that's the same thing he's looking at. I think he didn't sign his deal because he wanted more power than they gave him at first. And that's why the deal took a little bit longer for Ten Hag to sign. And when he signed it, it's because he has more to say now.
But, Shaka, he's just got this summer. He's got this kind of pre-season. How easy, like as Craig says, is it to get the good apples from the bad apples? Because surely you only really know how good your players are when they go out on the pitch and to see whether or not they go to war for you.
Well, I think he knows who's of a quality that he wants to keep. You can tell that just by some of the performances. The challenge he'll find is when he goes in and has a deeper look at some of those contracts, how difficult it is to move some of those players on. You might be stuck with them just because nobody wants to take on their wage. And how do you then balance that? Once you know the players who are of a quality that you want to keep, you have to figure out the ones who will be in the trenches, mm-hmm. with you. And that's a little bit more difficult. That will take getting to know the squad. But right now, I think the bigger problem for Manchester United is you simply don't have enough quality, right? I keep talking about the target being Liverpool and Manchester City. How many players in that Manchester United dressing room, even getting to Liverpool and City's squads, I'm not sure that there are three players in that dressing room. So everybody is available. Let's put it that way.
Manchester United have made some bad decisions in recent years, and a lot of them have been on the recruitment front, from managers to players. But the other bad thing I think they've been doing is they have been doing it for quite a while. They're rewarding mediocrity. Now, this has never been a club that's done anything else, and you only get rewarded there if you were shooting for the stars, because that's the standards. That's the standards that they set. They're a global juggernaut in terms of a football club around the world, but yet you only had to bang a few goals in or do something good for a few weeks at this club, and Ed Woodward and his cronies couldn't wait to give you a new 3 or 4 year deal. And that's leaving bigger problems down the line when you realise that it's not working and you've got to make change. So it's been one bad decision after another, from recruitment to contracts to renewals, and now Erik ten Hag's left with this. It's not all going to happen this summer. It could be quite a bit of movement this summer, but it's going to take a year or two for him to really drill in what Manchester United is all about and what he wants. Can they still get in the top four and be better than they are? For sure.
Yeah.
For sure, 100%. Because if Arsenal and Tottenham can be fighting for the top four...
Anyone can.
Why can't a Manchester United, with their spending and a very good manager, be doing it? But fighting for the next level, that's a different matter.
For more on where it all went wrong for Manchester United this season, I'm sure United fans would love to read Mark Ogden's article over on the website. Be sure to check it out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Welcome to Pamplona. Mallorca taking on Osasuna, where the visitors desperate for a victory to guarantee top-tier football next season. It is the final day of La Liga.
Pablo Mateo driving at the box. Angel! Angel! For Mallorca, Angel Rodriguez strikes.
Welcome to the Nuevo Los Cármenes in Granada. The hosts, they come into this match with one job and one job only, and that is to win this game. Cross comes in, off coming it out. Fans and a few players asking for a handball there. The referee is going to check the screen. The referee has looked at the video screen and points to the penalty spot. Granada have been awarded a penalty. A goal that would put Granada in the lead in their fight to avoid relegation. It's Jorge Molina, and he puts it wide for Granada. Jorge Molina puts the penalty wide, and Granada failed to take the lead.
This is Deportivo Alaves against Cadiz for a pivotal game on the final day of the season. The drama promises to be dizzying. José María again. Outside of the boot, delicate pass, inviting. Issa's low cross! It's the substitute, Lozano! It could be the goal that keeps Cadiz up. Yellow bedlam in one corner of Mendizorroza.
Right now, Mallorca above the relegation line. Dani Rodriguez. Header to the near post, chance for a second. Yes!
Minutes remaining here for Granada to try and get a goal. Out wide for Carlos Bacca. It's still Carlos Bacca. He goes for goal. The shot deflected and just wide. Carlos Bacca very close to scoring the goal.
And the referee blows the full-time whistle. The supporters are embracing. Cadiz are safe.
Few words to describe the joy felt by Mallorca. They survive. They stay up.
The news has just gone through. Cadiz have won their game. Mallorca have won their game. And Granada will be playing in La Liga Smartbank, the second tier of Spanish football, next season.
Oh man, how are you feeling for your Jorge Molina at the moment? That missed penalty, of course, proving decisive. Granada down in La Segunda next season. Cadiz and Mallorca safe. Meanwhile, the other end of the table, we saw Villarreal guarantee European football next season. They'll be in the Conference League after going to the Camp Nou and beating Barcelona by 2-0. But the title was wrapped up a long time ago, wasn't it, for Real Madrid? They finished 13 points clear of Barcelona, but there's still one big game left for Ancelotti's side. And that is, of course, the Champions League final in Paris this weekend. According to the bookies, Liverpool are the favourites going into the tie. Mario, this is the last time you're going to be on with us before the final, so I've got to get your prediction.
Oh, I have to tell you, I'm going to the final. So I'm more on the Liverpool side, guys. I'm so sorry to tell you. I understand I'm on the favorite side. I think Liverpool is going to take this, not because I don't think Real have surprised everybody. So we know what kind of great team it is. But I feel like Liverpool will push this on and go for the second trophy of club of winning the Champions League. What did I say? 2-1.
He's got in a fight. He's either working for somebody or he's on a free.
Yeah, who are you going to the final
he's
with,
on a free
Mario?
Or he's working for somebody.
And no, listen, Craig. Sometimes you go to games just to enjoy yourself. I'm not working.
Who are you talking
I'm just
to,
enjoying
Mario?
Myself.
Listen, right. Have you bought a ticket for the final or is it a freebie?
They have given it to me. I had an invite.
It's a freebie.
Eh?
See, it's a freebie.
I got invited. Invited to go to the Champions League final. Greg, we love football.
Listen,
come on. We
I would have gone
no
if I'd been invited.
Okay. You wouldn't have gone.
If I'd been invited.
You no, you wouldn't.
I'd think about it.
No, you wouldn't.
I would.
You wouldn't go. If you had to pay your own plane, you wouldn't go.
He's not paying. Mario's not paying
he
for his plane.
He might be paying for his plane.
But, guys, I'm from Amsterdam. I can see my family. And then I can go to Paris. Who says no to Paris? That's crazy, the person. Then go back to Amsterdam. Come on, guys.
You're right. You're right. I would think about it. Yeah. If somebody was paying my airfare and my hotel...
Right, yes, of course. That's
just getting a fee.
Yeah, that's a different kind of fee.
No, wait for it. And I've got a ticket, a three-course meal,
right,
an escort out of the ground so I don't have to get stuck with all the crap.
That'll be it.
I'm paid.
When are you going, Mario? When do you fly? Are you going to Amsterdam first?
I'm going tomorrow.
Nice one.
Him and Xhaka? Him and Xhaka?
Well, Xhaka went to Newcastle, it's not quite Paris.
Well, the same thing, wasn't it? What was Xhaka getting?
He's getting the freedom of the city.
Freedom of the city?
Yeah.
For what? For letting all those goals in?
Oh, for all his community work.
Community work.
Oh, my goodness. He set up a charity. What have you done with yourself?
He set up a charity?
Yes.
Something going on there. What have I done? I'm thinking about it.
Thinking about it. Shaka, you have the right to reply, by the way. Shaka,
is he still here? Good grief.
How do I reply to that? I just never considered to that.
Oh, you think all those crosses you flapped at, and they're giving you the freedom of the city?
Oh, dear. It was for his
Listen, for years you were giving people the freedom of the six-yard box. I bet he told the TV director as well on that live Premier League game exactly where his seat was going to be.
Right.
Just in case you want a close-up.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was more for his off-field antics than what he did on it. Look at that.
Watch out. Look at it. Don't know what it says, and I don't want to know. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Look at that.
Yeah.
It should say Neil. It should say your real name, Shaq.
I'm going to get one of them for tomorrow's show.
No one's going to give you that. Oh, my God. Mario, have a good time. Are you going to see Frank LeBeuf for you there, Mario? There he is.
I'm going to see Frank. Maybe I see Frank, so let me see if I see him, man.
I wouldn't go out your way.
Listen, you'll hear Frank before you see him. Don't worry.
Of course, extra time available on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hertha Berlin will be in the Bundesliga once again next season after coming from behind to beat Hamburg by 2-1 across the two legs. After the game, Archie Rintat caught up with Kevin Prince-Boateng.
Prince, yourself and Hertha have done it. You have survived. How did that feel?
Unbelievable. It's like winning a league. I'm telling you, it's like we won the league. It was a crazy year, a tough year for me and for the whole team, for the club. So much negative press. A lot of people thought we were dead. We weren't able to do it. So that's why it's so much sweeter, you know, when you come here and you win this game, losing the first leg. It's just the spirit, you know. We in these 3 days before the game, we created the spirit, and I think you saw it 90 minutes on the field today.
How did you create that spirit in the dressing room? What do you do to do that?
The boys listen to the daddy. I spoke to them. They listened. They listened. I spoke to them. I asked them if they're hungry, if they're still hungry, and they all told me I'm hungry. And I told them, let's go and eat. This weekend was unbelievable. I watched all my ex-clubs, and they were all like celebrating. Say, okay, I need to celebrate today because it's impossible. I see the 40-year-old Ibrahimovic celebrating. I need to celebrate as well.
Daddy told them. They were hungry, they went to eat. Mansfield Town against Port Vale then for a place in League One is on Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern here on ESPN Plus. And then on Sunday, the big one, Huddersfield against Nottingham Forest. That game starts at 11:30. Our coverage starts at 11 a.m. Eastern here on ESPN Plus. Me and Craig in the studio looking ahead to that game where, of course, a place in the Premier League is at stake.
I thought that game always used to be on a Monday.
It was Bank Holiday Monday.
Bank Holiday
Monday.
It. Well,
there we are. It's on Sunday. World's changing, Craig. There we are. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra time is next. Mario and Shaka are back with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Craig Burley with me here in the studio. Shaka, here's something we learned, that Mario's going to the Champions League final tomorrow. What a moment.
Yeah, and he's going to try and avoid Frank Leboeuf.
Yes, I think that's what most people do when they go to Paris.
Most people, not when they go to Paris. Most people in Paris try and avoid Frank.
Just to avoid Frank.
You know he goes around Paris in a little scooter?
You know he goes around in his 98 kit?
Yeah, with he's got the World Cup sellotape to the top of his head.
You guys really love Frank, I hear it.
Oh man,
because he's got a big megaphone. Frank Leboeuf here, World Cup winner, come get your picture. Laurent Blanc running behind them because you took my medal.
Hey Shaq, how was Newcastle, man? Did you have a good time?
I had a really good time. It was really, really good.
Oh, fantastic.
The place is buzzing, man. It's great.
Yeah?
It's great.
What's this I'm hearing
be?
That you went out in the town and nobody recognised you?
I did not go out into the town, Craig. I've never been out to Newcastle.
I was told.
I've got nothing to do with this.
I was told. Oh, we're here. Sorry, I set up. Lovely. I was told you went out for a little. Well, you went. You did a LeBouf. You walked around town to see who would recognise you. And nobody did.
Oh, there you go. Shaq is in one of those old Newcastle goalkeeping tops, the baggy,
baggy
ones. Yeah.
With all the colours. Yeah. And he's got a big set of gloves on. Yeah. And again, who's that guy walking around? Who's this idiot?
Although Shaq are probably not as baggy now these days.
And he's got that mayor of Newcastle. He's got the big thing. You know,
yes.
The mayor.
Yeah, the medallion kind of
medallion.
Thing.
Medallion. Oh. Yeah, he's got his framed whatever it is.
That's beautiful. We're very proud of you, Shaq. Well, I was very proud of you.
Proud.
Isn't that nice? What was it? Well, because it's all his charity work, because he set up the show Races in the Red Card. He did that in Newcastle, and he was being...
Doesn't mean he did it in Newcastle.
That's where he did it. That's where he started it.
He's a Harlem Globetrotter. The man's everywhere. He starts things in every country.
Hey, okay. At least they gave him a great seat, though, in the stadium. I don't know if you guys saw where you were sitting. That was a serious seat where you were sitting.
Yeah.
I got to give him props for that. Wow, that seat was impressive. Right.
Where's your seat? Oh, your seat's going to be VIP, isn't it, Mario, in Paris?
I would not go if I had a bad seat. I'm sorry, then.
Yeah, I know. You'll be there. You'll be wanting the halfway line with the TV and the servers, bringing him everything. For Shaka, is there a more complete goalkeeper than Alisson when you combine his ability to read the game and control his box, his shot-stopping reflexes and distribution?
Yeah, I think Alisson, at very least, is top three in the world. I think that's up for debate alongside Courtois and Manuel Neuer. He does everything, as you would expect for somebody of that quality. He does everything. I guess there are other goalkeepers who are better in certain aspects, but all round, as I say, one of the top three in the world, without question.
Mario, who was the best goalkeeper you played with?
Edwin van der Sar, by far. You know, I've learned so much from him. You know, as a player, you know, I was young. I was 19 years old. I was actually at school and in the first team of Ajax, and the things he was telling me, it still resonates to me. Like if I talk to players, you want your goalkeeper to really explain to you what he wants you to do, because that's very important.
When you were playing for Chelsea at 16, were you still going to school?
16?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, when you moved to Chelsea, were you going to school as well?
No, I'd left school.
Yeah, it kind of shows.
Because I'd done everything, I had achieved everything that I wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
But the school asked me.
I had to go to school because Louis van Gaal was my coach. And trust me, he rang my school to check if I was coming. So I had to go to school, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, no, back then we were done and dusted at 16.
That was it. You learned enough.
The school said, listen, there's nothing more we can do for you here.
Yeah, off you go.
Don't worry, Greg. You're good.
The only thing left for you is to get
they
life skills.
Up. School just gave up.
Go to London.
Get some life skills.
But when I told them I was leaving, they said, we thought you'd left a couple of years ago.
Saw a video which clearly shows Son asking someone if Salah scored during the Spurs-Norwich match. Do players really pay attention to the scoring title and think of stats during a game? Do managers factor in scoring titles and player bonus, etc., prior to their last match day?
Read me that again.
It was Son against Salah. Son asked whether or not Salah had scored, because obviously they're both competing for the Golden Boot. How much does a player really care about that?
Well, obviously they do.
Okay.
It's not... I don't know. What was the other part of it?
Managers. Would managers play you because they know you're in the hunt for the Golden Boot?
Well, the answer is maybe yes, depending on what the scenario was. For example, if there was an Aston Villa scenario at the weekend, just to take them because that was one of the big games, they're only playing for a league position, which is worth a few million pounds in the whole scheme of things in the Premier League pot. But then, you know, a scenario where a manager might play if that was the case. I hasten to add, if you're in that position anyway, there's a fair chance the manager's going to be playing you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why you're in that position.
Yeah.
But if, for example, Tottenham were going for the Champions League, which they were, places, and Heung-Min Son had a bad run in form and had scored his goals early in the season, and they had a big game, not against the Norwich in particular, but an even bigger game, then Conte wouldn't have played him.
Yeah.
No.
He wouldn't have gone, oh, I'm going to risk getting fourth spot so that my man can maybe bag a couple of goals. I'm just picking a team to win a game. It depends on the scenarios, would be my point. What are you laughing at?
Craig, if you're a player in the PSG dressing room, would the power dynamic be awkward knowing Mbappe picked the coach, has a seat on the board and asked to sign and ship out players?
Yes. Yes.
You wouldn't like it?
No. No. Neither would all the guys that I played with.
Right.
I don't mind guys going to the manager and having a good relationship with them. Janssen and Larsson from Feyenoord, their days at Feyenoord, great relationship. You know, Glenn Hoddle, Ruud Gullit and others, good relationships with players. Not a problem with that, but I have a problem with if you're having a bad time as a player and you know potentially a teammate is maybe talking about you getting taken out of the team because he has a power with a manager, that's going to fester into a bigger problem in the dressing room.
Right.
Yeah. It just is.
Right.
If I'm playing with Mario and he has got so much power at a club that he could go to the manager and say, listen, Burley's not playing well. You're going to find out about that.
Okay.
And then that relationship's going to be...
Right.
It's you cannot have a player having way too much power over the other players. And I don't know if the lads think differently. That's the way I think about it.
Should we ask them?
No, let's not.
Mario, what do you think?
No, I agree. You know, because I look at a player like Greg said, you know, if we play together and he's got more power in the team than anybody else has. I mean, I'm not talking about his ability. I'm not talking about how great he is as a player. I'm talking about just him making the decisions. I would not like that. I would not be happy with that. And also when it comes to like, I had it maybe like, you know, when it's a crucial game and I had maybe one time when I was at Wigan, we were fighting for relegation and I could see one of my players being really tired, but I think he was worried to tell the coach. Then I would only tell, at that time I told the coach, I said, hey, have a look at him because he looks tired and we have to win the game. That's the only thing I did, but I'm not going to tell him, take him out. No, that's not my job. I don't even want that job.
It sounded like you wanted him off the pitch, Mario.
No, I wanted him to be aware of him because if he makes us relegate just because he is tired, and my job was keeping the Wigan side in the Premier League, that's why I became the captain of that team, then I'm going to do whatever it takes. But I'm not going to say to coach, yeah, do this or do that. No, and my coach was Steve Bruce. And I think you know his character. He's not going to listen to what I got to say at that point.
Who does listen to what you have to say, Mario?
Everybody, my friend.
You wait for it. You wait for it when you say, are there any tickets maybe that are going?
Ah, dear.
Shaka, why are the large majority of ex-professional players who have now become managers played as midfielders during their career? And where are the ex-goalkeepers in the managerial space? What have we got, Shaq? Lopetegui?
I don't know.
That's about it, isn't it?
We had Dino Zoff and Walter Zenger back in the days, but I can't think of goalkeepers who become managers.
And why is that, Shaq?
I don't know. Bias. Everybody's against goalkeepers. Everybody's anti-goalkeeper, that's what it is.
Because every goalkeeper I played with was a big, stupid goalie.
Well, Shaq is not a big, stupid goalie. He's the mayor of Newcastle.
Look at that face. Look at that face. You're telling me that's not daft? Trust me, everyone, they've got a screw loose.
Right.
He's a screw loose as well. He just doesn't show it. They've got a screw loose. They do things that... Well, honestly, you have to have a little bit of that as a goalkeeper because you see them coming out sometimes and they're like... They just put their head in there and... They can't be coaches.
Most of the midfielders, is that fair?
Strikers, I don't know. We need to do that. We can do a graphic, I suppose. That's tomorrow's show.
Do a graphic. It's interesting you mentioned Steve Bruce, Mario. He's been getting, obviously, a bit of stick over the time regarding his time at Newcastle, and then obviously sat Eddie Howe coming in. I just wonder, how does that frustrate you, knowing him as a manager?
No, it's just like, you know, when I had Steve as a manager, the only thing I sometimes had with Steve was that he had to adapt to the time where we were. And sometimes he was too traditional. And I think that could be maybe only the key thing. Away from that, he loves the game, works hard on the game. He clearly, when he came at Wigan, we were in trouble. He made everybody fit, and that made us stay in the league. I think that I will always remember. But on the other side, I'm not that close to understand what really is going on. But history will always talk at fans. You know, they don't like it when you come from one angle to go to another one. And that's just a sad part of it.
It's not been going great from the last few years. He had a period in management where he was doing really well. But the one thing I'd say about Steve Bruce, and whether people care about it or not, it's not a coaching thing. He's one of the real good guys in the game. Trust me. He's a player's manager. He's one of the real good guys. A lot of charlatans out there, some of them have success, some of them don't. They would stab you in the back as soon as look at you. The game's full of them. He is, whether you think he's a good coach or not, he's one of the proper old school football men in the game. I've got a lot of time for people like that because I know a lot of them who are not.
And you don't have a lot of time for many people.
I do have lots of time for lots of people.
Yeah, right.
Apart from those that go to freebies to Champions League finals. to be
Greg,
the mayor
Greg,
of...
Sometimes, listen, my friend, sometimes you get an invite and we all love football, but the finals, how can we say no to a final? Come on, my friend, come on now.
No, I'm not criticising you at all, Mario.
Shaka, what was the cleverest negotiation tactic that you or a teammate ever pulled off to enhance the financial terms of your playing contract? Wow.
I don't know.
No.
Well, first of all, you don't know what your teammates are doing. Nobody discusses money in that way of, you know, round negotiation. Cleverest tactic that I don't think I was in a position to try any clever tactics.
You had Gareth Bale's agent, didn't you? Was it Jonathan Barnett? Is that who it was, Shaq? So he just did everything for you?
Correct.
Yeah. There you go. We know what he's done with Bale, but
just say you're not going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
I'm not going to mention clubs, but I used that tactic when I was leaving one club to go to another, and I was actually getting paid to leave the club. Not paid to leave as in we're paying you to leave, but by me saying, well, I'm not doing the deal unless I get a remuneration. And that went on for quite some time, enjoyment of my teammates.
I bet. Is he still here?
Not the enjoyment of the manager and the director at the time, who every morning I used to go by the manager's office and the general manager's office and go, morning! Still here. And then I walked in the dressing room and all the lads went, are you still here? And I'm shouting out the door, yeah, I'm still here! But that lasted for about a month. And then, guess what?
They found the money.
The negotiation worked.
There you go.
I was off.
Yeah.
What about you, Mario?
No, I totally agree. Sometimes you have moments in your career that you have to play. Like, I was like, now we're going back to my age. I was a young boy, 19 years old, and Ajax called me upstairs to sit with five top directors that did negotiation for fun. And I sit there on my own, and I didn't have my agent with me, so I had to talk to them. So I'm talking to them, and I'm saying, like, they really almost like, I have to say, if I think back about that time, was almost like trying to bully me. And saying, right, like, oh, do you want to stay or do you don't want to stay? Mm. And I was like, no, I want to stay here. I want to stay here, but I just want to take my time. Next thing you know, I signed a two-year deal. And then we came to, at the end of the 2 year, they wanted to renegotiate with me. And then they gave me 1 week to think about it because they already had a feeling that I was leaving. I didn't mind it. But then I had one situation with Feyenoord and PSV calling me. And that just implemented the attraction to you. And that's what Chelsea knew. And then I signed for Chelsea. That's how my journey went.
The funny thing was, the individual I was dealing with is well-renowned within the game that he doesn't take defeat badly.
Yep.
He doesn't take defeat well.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
And when when my agent said to me, well, the deal's off, you're not going to do it, and I kept saying, oh, I'm not going then. After a month, the individual at the club didn't phone the agent and me he phoned the other club. He went, deal's back on. Because he didn't want to admit.
Have you seen that individual since?
Yes.
And it's okay?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
I don't hold grudges.
Sorry?
I don't hold grudges.
You know,
honestly, I don't have a problem with it. I spoke to the. I'm not going to mention names. I've spoke to the individual
it's
many,
like
many
Cluedo.
Times. I don't want to.
Okay.
Also, you know, I had a really bad relationship with John Gregory.
Yes.
When John was at Derby.
Yes.
We both had faults, and you know, it ended badly for the both of us. But I've told you this before. John was not allowing me in the car park and doing silly stuff. When I saw John, I talked to him.
Right.
Honestly.
Why do you upset people everywhere you go?
I don't. Sometimes personalities clash.
Final question.
And you got to stand up for yourself.
What was the summer break like for footballers back in your day?
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Any memorable summers come to mind?
Every summer. Do you know what they do now? I would imagine they do now. They get programmes.
Yes. Yeah, I imagine so.
Programs. The season finished. Maybe you went on an end of season tour, depending what club you were at. Maybe you went on a tour, which was a bit of a jolly up, played some games. Somebody got money. Yeah, I mean, like the club. Somebody got some money for it. You had a few beers and you celebrated a good season, a bad season, or whatever with your teammates. And then you went, see you in 2 months.
Did you not miss it though? The camaraderie, the daily meeting up with the boys, training, because you're going to go from
You need that break.
You're going to go from that environment, though.
You know you're having that environment again.
Like you're with your family, you're every day with
them. You go on holiday.
Yeah, but you can't go on holiday for 2 months.
You take a big long holiday,
right.
and then you know you're going back into pre-season. The horrible part of it, and it's probably different now, because they probably have... Their fitness is probably monitored through the summer, although they need rest.
Yeah.
You still need rest.
They still wear those special bras all the time, yeah?
My experience is that you just took time off, you had a complete rest, and then you dreaded going back for pre-season.
Right.
And the amount of players I saw coming back that had clearly had a good summer when they got on the scales.
Oh, so
fat
good,
hanging off them.
Imagine it. Oh. Shaka, I can only imagine, like, the full-time whistle goes, how long is it then until you're back in Trinidad?
As quick as possible. A couple of times, the lads would go on an end of season trip for a few days to Marbella or something of the sort. But then I would always go back to Trinidad because I'd been away from Trinidad for months. As you know, my wife also from Trinidad, so we would just head straight back as soon as we could and be there for as long as we could.
And what's changed? You're still doing that now.
But wait, Chuck, so you, like, the season would finish and you'd go...
The season would finish and you'd go away
with all the boys?
I've been nearly 2 months now. Huh?
The season would finish and you'd go away with all the boys?
Yeah.
How did you get away with that?
Well, he's a mayor.
If I said to my wife, I'm going out now, season's finished, I'm off.
Oh my God.
See you later.
Yeah, but you're weak.
Yeah, that's true. I am weak.
It's an end of season trip.
End of season trip.
As it would.
A debrief.
Catch the ball more next season,
a debrief.
But then, let me ask you something. And I know, let me ask the guys something. Have you guys not had the moment when you had to ask for a player to the wife or tell the player, like, hey, it's my birthday, let's go out? I'm sure one of you guys have seen it. Because when I got to Chelsea, some of the players told me, Mario, pretend like it's your birthday today so we can go out. Hey, they dropped that knowledge a couple of times. Mario, just say it's your birthday. And I go, what do you mean it's my birthday? My birthday is at the end of the year. No. Pretend like it's early of the year. So we do like it's your birthday. And then we pretend like we go home and we say, hey, we got to go out. Mario is celebrating, you know, everybody's going.
Fantastic.
And I said,
wasn't it his birthday 2 weeks ago?
No.
We pick another player every time,
Ben. I'm checking in with you. It's not that there's anything bad, and I'm not going to tell this story.
Okay.
But do you think... Because it's a very clean story.
Right.
I can do it without naming name. The Brian McBride story on the Fulham player.
I don't remember that. You've just named names.
All right, I won't go into it too much, but there was a... When Brian, who's, you know, a lovely guy, Brian tells a great story. that one of the Fulham players, that's a very generic now, so we're good, one of the Fulham players told his wife that after every game, home game on a Saturday, the players had to go in the and spend the night in the hotel for rest and recuperation.
That's a killer move. No.
Now that to me, as a man with,
at home.
That to me, with a man who has quite a bit of experience in this sort of scenario, that has got no longevity of lasting. But if you think you can get away with that,
yes.
Yeah. That's why it's better to have this straight up approach. I'm
right.
Going out.
Right, that was it.
Yeah.
Don't be weak.
Don't be weak. Yeah.
When Brian told me that, I was like, that's brilliantly flawed.
Oh my God, imagine.
Because
families
talk at games.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. It's really frustrating. Exactly. It's really frustrating the boys have to go in the hotel every Saturday night. What hotel? Someone's in trouble.
Someone's in big trouble
here.
That is it. Happy birthday, Mario. Enjoy your trip to the Champions League.
Yeah.
Okay,
he's not going to the Champions League.
It's Mario's birthday. It's all right. I'm out.
I'll send you a picture, Greg. Don't worry. You will get the picture. I will make sure you guys get it.
I want to see it.
We will be back tomorrow for a lot more. Are you here tomorrow?
I'm having a rest day.
Good. We will be back. Who knows what we've been talking about.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.